Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
This is Spoke, the all-new and exclusive podcast series with me, Chidera, a.k.a. The Slum Flower.
And me, Sully Breaks, poet, writer, spoken word, artist, etc., etc.
Where we discuss issues at the heart of youth culture and how music and literature are shaping the conversation. It's been over a year since the tragedy at Grenfell, tearing the heart out of a community and forcing London to take a long, hard look at what kind of a place it's become. The city has arguably never been more divided, and this is reflected in the country as a whole. As this disparity grows and communities break down, it's now reported council-run youth services will face a funding cut of an estimated $3 billion by 2025. Young people are increasingly left to fend for themselves as the government makes cuts to youth services and community centres, and young people are left with the dwindling resources and no safe environments to explore who they are or meet like-minded people.
How can young people make their mark if they're not given the opportunities to do so? Where do divides in our society leave young people on the margins? And is it time we took things into our own hands? In this episode, we discuss community, creativity, and the ever-increasing divide between us and them.
Okay, so Grenfell's a really difficult one.
Extremely.
Really difficult to speak about.
It's very...
Because... it just feels like an incomplete story.
Mm.
And what's even more heartbreaking is recently Theresa May invited people to come down to Downing Street in celebration of, I think it was in celebration of British African communities.
Yeah.
And I was actually one of the people that was invited to that. But I turned it down and I said the reason why I'm not going is because it just feels like a desperate...
like an appeasement kind of method.
Yeah, it feels like a desperate virtue signal on her end, and I don't want to do PR for her, and I don't feel like the way Grenfell was handled was righteous. I don't think she did enough. So it feels strange to me that, you know, there are people from the community that she's inviting to Downing Street who were heavily affected by the tragedy, and for that disconnect to exist, and she still felt confident enough to invite us to her space to make her look good. It didn't make any sense to me. And I think in situations like that, it's really disappointing and heartbreaking because I still feel like there's so much that could have been done. And the conversation about it is really, it hasn't ended. And it's evident in the way that we speak about things like, you know, youth centres and violence and drill and even Grenfell. All of these things are still prominent in our society, and I'm really curious and I guess a bit optimistic.
But I totally agree with you. I think the biggest question we got asked is like, is it ignorance or is it like complete just like conscious negligence? And then is it kind of like, what is the, what like you said, her inviting people like you, is that manipulative? Do you see what I'm saying? Because like we say, inherently, there's still so many problems in our community that haven't been addressed, you know, that haven't been dealt with, but the country's still progressing as though they're insignificant, they're irrelevant. Do you understand what I'm saying? So unless we kind of have these discussions, where are we going to see them champion on any kind of platform, you know?
Yeah, it's a difficult one because sometimes the issue is if you're not in the room, how can you make change? But at the same time, that person needs to be receptive to what that change requires.
Yeah.
And also that person needs to display a willingness for that change to happen. And I don't feel like Theresa May had either of that. So it wouldn't have made sense for me to go there and Do you know what I mean?
I totally understand that, man. I feel like one of the things I've always wanted to do is like, just, I'm not really into politics, but to sit down with a politician outside of them working, you know, like it's kind of like sitting with your manager outside of like work. Like say if you worked in a corporate place, whatever, and you said to the manager, let's go for a drink. You see a different side of that person.
Yeah.
I'd be so interested to sit down with her, like when she's going home to her family, and actually be like, know what is like, is this just a job for you? Are you just pretending? Do you know that all these people hate what you're doing? Are you aware? Or you just, is it like completely just desensitized to what's going on?
Well, the thing is, you can be aware that a lot of people are not happy with the work that you're doing, but if you don't value them enough as people, then
exactly,
they don't value how they think.
Comes down to community.
Yeah. Big news.
Big news. We have our first ever live show coming on November 17th
in my hometown of Peckham. We'll be doing a live record with the incredible Emma Dabiri, the author of Don't Touch My Hair, and Rally Ritchie of Game of Thrones.
We have performances with the one and only Getz and Lava LaRue. We've got Martello and Antonia Adelami on the decks.
And there'll be workshops from Enlarge Your Memories and Tottenham Textiles.
To buy tickets now, starting at £5, head to Dice and see tickets.
So we got Amelia de Moldenberg in at the building. You might recognise her from Chicken Shop Date.
Hello.
You got to introduce yourself and don't do nothing.
Wait, are you going to be in character?
No,
are
I'm
you
not.
Going to be Amelia?
I don't know. I'm going to slip into character. Who knows?
Listen, one thing. We don't want no... Sorry to cut you off. I just want to preempt that. We don't want no humbleness right here. Do you understand what I'm saying? Say who you are, introduce yourself and champion yourself, because this girl is an extremely hard worker. She's taking a unique concept and taking it to completely different heights. Had some amazing guests and she's innovating in her space. So let the people know who you are and say it in your chest.
Wow, okay. Obviously,
She's like that.
She's like, right.
I am Amelia de Moldenberg. And I created a YouTube channel called Chicken Shop Date. And I think I'm really happy with where it is right now. I think it's one of the best interview formats that there is right now.
100.
Within music, comedy, personalities in general that I think young people in the UK are really interested in. And that's why I want to get them on my show. I also hope that it shows a different side to those guests that you wouldn't normally see in other interviews. And also it's a comedy. It's comedy first, I think. Obviously, I want to show some insight, but at the end of the day, everything I do is just to make people laugh first and foremost. But yeah, I also been in a few documentaries, one on Channel 4 this year, which is really amazing, about the royal wedding. And I want to get more into television. I'm on a show on ITV2 called Don't Hate the Players at the moment as well. So that's been really exciting, doing more TV. That's definitely what I want to be doing. And also carrying on doing Chicken Shop Date and creating my own stuff, because you get so much more creative freedom when you can make your own things. So yeah, that's
dope,
me.
Dope. Chidera, you want to give the drum roll for our next guest? Stand it to the left, the man,
cheese,
the myth,
cheese,
the iconic,
cheese,
Arnold Jones.
Man, like AJ.
Yeah, AJ. You know, I mean,
why are you laughing?
None of this humble business, bro. Introduce yourself to the people who don't know. Give us your whole track record. You know what I mean?
CV.
Yeah, that's right. Let the people know.
Hi, I'm Arnold. George. I'm not good at intros, you know. Yeah, man, I'm Arnold. I'm an actor, comedian, writer. I probably known for a character I used to do called A Squeezy. Put that to bed to focus more on my production company, which I started this year. So far, just been writing BBC, writing for different brands. And we got a series coming out. Can't say what the series is. Comes out in January. That I've been working on alongside Jazzy. Yeah, man, just got a few stuff, man, working on a feature film at the minute. And just trying to get stuff out there more as a writer and slowly getting back into front of the camera, because I feel like, you know, like when you're a singer-songwriter and then you start songwriting for so long and you forget that you're actually a singer as well. So I've been writing a lot for other people's projects, or writing a lot for, you know, projects that I've been producing and directing under my production company that I forgot that I actually act. Like, even sometimes my manager or people that I'm working with are like, why don't you play that role? I'm like, but I can't act. They're like, but you're an actor. I'm like, So just been doing that.
Okay, let's talk then, because I think both of you have very significant roles in a specific creative community that's existing and is flourishing within the UK, innit? So I think the biggest thing is, do you lot, how do you guys perceive the community, and what does community mean to you? I mean, what incentivized you to want to tell the stories that I guess typically are not championed by other platforms?
Well, my sort of beginning started at a youth club in Northwest London, which I think, Arnold, you actually stopped by a couple times.
Yeah,
I don't remember me, but I remembered you.
Yes, I remember that, man. I was doing the photography. They had a magazine, didn't it?
At this youth club, it was...
How old were you at the time?
I was in sixth form, so I was like 17. And we basically made a magazine. That was the point of everyone getting together. And it was called The Cut.
Yeah.
And it was made by two women called Nina Mandahar and Nendi.
Yeah.
And they were really amazing. And basically anyone could go. Well, actually you had to be under 21, but
I think I was 15.
Anyone under 21 could go.
From West London. I didn't live in West, by the way, I snuck in.
No one lived in West, actually. Yeah. Like, people were from like Feltham, like far away. But I actually lived nearby, and that's how I found out about it, because I got an email through from school. But that's sort of where I got into like the whole sort of UK rap, grime world, because obviously like I'm not really born into that world, and I was like a huge fan of like McFly at the time, so
I think everyone was
everyone
was like, you know what I mean?
I'm a donor. I was about to start singing Busted. I had to stop myself.
Yeah, Busted as well.
I literally stopped myself, but yeah.
I had no idea. I wasn't a fan of UK rap and grime, but everyone there was like, that's all they were listening to. And when we got there, it was what was playing on phones and stuff, and everyone was talking about it. And I wanted to get in on the conversation and have something to talk about, so I wasn't just sitting on the sidelines like complete lemon. And so that's where I thought, I'd love to interview these people and like get to know an insight into their lives. And so that's how the format of Chicken Shop Date started, really. I also wanted to go on a date, and I think that...
just combined the two. Business and pleasure.
Jeez.
Yeah. And also, when I started doing Chicken Shop Date, those artists were big in the scene, but they weren't in the charts as much. And now to see people like last week, Fredo and Dave are number one. So like, now I'm not only interviewing just like rappers, I'm interviewing the most popular musicians in the country, which is amazing.
Dope. So I'd like to direct the question to you as well, Arnold. I mean, Amelia's basically just explained how the community kind of intrinsically gave her the kind of like courage or kind of like the passion to want to like discuss it more. Do you understand? So how did the community contribute towards your creativity? You know what I mean? And what does it mean to you in your art, you know?
For me, it was like, I'm not going to act like this. I've got the same story. The cut helped me in that sense. The cut helped me in a sense where, because now that you've said that, I feel like saying it now, the cut helped me in a sense where when I started that, I was like, young youth from the ends, I was just doing end stuff, you understand what I'm saying? And I just didn't leave my area. I remember I was always in the ends, you know, just doing hood stuff and whatever, and you know,
as
you, whatever.
We don't see
whatever.
Let's leave it at whatever. I'm Arnold George now. Yeah, so it's like when I was there, it was like I remember I was in the ends one day and my friend was like, yo, I just see this ad for this thing called The Cut, whatever, can we go? Them times there, it was in like Ladbroke Grove area. And, you know, when you're from the end, you think, oh, nice, a slip. Man's got to go there, whatever. So we was just like, nah, man's not going. I was just like, I'm not going. But we was like, let's just try it. And I remember, I was like, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? So we went there, got through. And then I remember I was doing the photography with them. And being there, I remember they took me on some shoot to film, like to take pictures of some models. And I remember seeing people get free clothes, I was just like, there's more to like, I'm in the ends. I'm like, they're not getting free Adidas just for posing with them on. You get me? I remember took pictures for Red Yates. I met Maniac, bare people. Like, I met Skits Beats there, P Money, like all these people. And I was just like, this is like, there is more to what man's doing where I'm doing it. You know what I mean? So I was just like, let me, from that kind of open my eyes, because I was just a kid from the ends that didn't know better. You get what I'm coming from? And when I saw other things, I was like, rah, like, I can get paid. Because I remember even when I first done my first show, when I first started doing the A Squeezy character, I remember I got booked in Peterborough. And me and Rashid from Linkup went up there to do the show. And I remember they were like, how much do you want us to pay you? It's like paid for what? Like, and I was like, I remember, I think I told them like a 150.
Yeah, and that's calm when you first.
We didn't think
out,
about
that, yeah.
But we didn't think about the journey there, all that. We had to get the, me and Rishi had to go to Peterborough on the train. We
you
didn't think about
that money.
Yeah, it was mad. I was like, give me a bill 50. I'm easy. You get me? Like, whatever. But it was like just that, like just being able to, you know, do that is something that inspires me, motivates me, because there's a lot of kids that have different role models. You know what I mean? At the time, I had different mentors who was telling me to. That's why I always thank my boy Matthew, who showed me about the cut, because it was like, he weren't a mentor, he was my friend, but at the time, it was like it helped. You get what I mean? Because everyone else was saying, let's go do this, let's go do that. And that's why I'm so passionate about this thing, because it's like, there's a lot of kids out there that are talented, that are just in the ends, but they don't know what to do. They don't know any better. Mm. They know what they know because they wake up in the morning, and a lot of them, especially that live on the estate, it's hard to leave the ends when you're on the estate. So as soon as you come out your yard, you're on the estate. And most time, a lot of men, like even when you watch Giggs' old interviews, they'll say that they didn't ever know anything other than the ends.
Yeah. So,
and it sounds mad when you say to someone that's not from the ends, but
yeah.
I didn't even want to go Chocodero
no,
them times
sense,
because
bro,
of the stories
like, yeah.
that man would hear, like Chocodero used to be, man, that's an arcade in Central.
No.
Back then it was like, Chocodero, I'm not going out there, man. I've got to go there prepared, or I got to go there tooled up or whatever. And it was silly.
Bro, yeah. I grew up in Wood Green. I totally understand. Like, I think I didn't go to South London. Like, I had to go and link my girl, like, you know, my wife. Mm-hmm. That's the only time I went to South. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What am I doing in South? I was risking my life to go and see her. Do you understand?
Now you're married to her with a kid, so it made sense.
She's crying.
Huh?
She's crying tears.
I'm always like this when he mentions his wife or his son.
Oh yeah. Let's get onto it. I think.
Do you
like,
know what? I think it's really ironic that both of you were part of this really inspiring and awesome magazine called The Cut, and now there are. That situation doesn't even exist anymore because there are literal cuts now to youth services. And imagine if both of you did not go to those services you went to and you never had access to The Cut. Mm-hmm. Do you reckon you would have had the careers that you had now?
No, not at all. Because I don't think... I wouldn't have started doing Chicken Shop Date. And Chicken Shop Date has given me all of the opportunities that I now have as a result of me, putting that platform out. The Cut really, like, gave me the confidence to be able to write, to be able to create. I feel like what Anna was saying, like, take somewhere they would never go before, but also it hones crafts and it teaches kids to have confidence in something and that maybe their talent is something that they never knew they would be. The format of a magazine is, like, there's so many different aspects to it. You can be a photographer, you can be a writer, you can be a producing editorial, all those kind of things. So it was amazing to have a youth club that not only gave us a space, a physical space, but also had a structure to it. So you weren't just... I know other people's experiences of youth clubs are very different because you just go there and you play video games or...
Or foosball.
Listen
to them clash. That was
If you talk to someone like Dizzy or someone like that, his experience of a youth club isn't writing articles in magazines.
Yeah.
gives you different experiences. But yeah, definitely I don't think that I would be where I am today without it. So I'm really, really grateful for that.
For me, it's different because The Cut helped in the sense where I built a few links there and, you know, it gave me that foresight to see things differently. But my thing started in college.
But using your community that's around you to be creative, I feel like that's really, really important.
And it's important.
And something that anyone can do.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, oh, but how do I start? How do I get my foot in the door? How do I become a presenter? How do I become a comedian? How do I do this? And how do I become a poet, a writer? Like, anyone can do it. Like, that social media, online, all of those things has made it possible for you to create your own platform. Like, Chidera, didn't you start as a blogger?
Yep.
Yeah.
I started as a literal...
Tumblr.
It was a very, very... Yeah. Well, it was initially Tumblr for a while, but then I moved on to, like, so there's this thing called Blogspot. Don't even know if that exists anymore.
Yeah.
It was, like, run by Google, I think. Very clunky, very analog. Started there. But at the time when I started, like, similar to you, it was more about the excitement of just loving doing it and not caring about trying to gather an audience. I mean, obviously, as time evolves and you start to realise that people are interested, that's when you then start to think about, you know, how people are going to respond to certain things and you start to communicate with your audience through that art or media that you're putting out there. But just like you, it's something that you had to have, you know, used people in your network. So it's really, really similar to you. My friends at the time were photographers and videographers and, like, we would just, like, borrow each other's equipment and it was all just like you, on favours. I never paid anyone.
Yeah.
And
didn't have any money to pay anyone.
We never, we were all broke and ambitious.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll ask Amelia,
what item did you have today?
The item that I brought is Big Nasty's comments on young people that he made in our chicken shop date.
Ooh, episode. What did he say?
Well, I asked him if he has any sort of advice for young people today. I think it was at a time when sort of the rise in the amount of people who are being killed on the streets had risen to a number that hasn't been seen before. And I thought it was important to talk about, but I wanted to ask him, not directly that, but just to get his views on the subject, because he's someone that has spoken about his political and social sort of stance a lot of times before.
Devil makes work for idle hands, you know what I mean? Like, I was speaking about it with my mum the other day. These young kids are a bit fucked because of two things. Yeah, we're fucked because of what the government's doing by taking all resources and facilities away. But we're fucked on another hold that a lot of parents haven't got any control of their kids. That's just the honest truth. A lot of parents are getting spat at and shouted at by their own kids. So, unfortunately, a kid who can spit at his mum and talk however he wants to his mum, you may be able to do that to your mum, but you can't do that to man. So that's where problems will happen. And education's not just learning 2 + 2 = 4 and ABCs. Education is a trade. Learning something where you think you will be able to change the circumstance you're in. Mm. Mo Farah sign. Come on.
But yeah, I just thought it was interesting because I'd never sort of done anything serious in Chicken Shop Day or like had anyone speak about anything other than like, I don't know, like if their music was was a piece of chicken, what would it be? So that was really good, I think. And I was like debating whether to include it or not, but I think he's so engaging as a character that even though it was a more serious topic, I think it was still as engaging as the funny parts of the interview. And I think it's good, you know, if you can capture people's attention, if you can make them laugh and also have some kind of insight, I think that's the kind of content that I'd love to be making more of.
As much as, you know, it is a lighthearted form of media that you're making, at the same time, because the nature of what you're doing is that you're documenting the times and there are so many cultural anchors that are coming on the show, like Big Nasty, I think it's really key that that perspective is shown because it leads into the question of responsibility, especially as someone that's creating something from the community.
Yeah, especially as I know that like my demographic is like young kids, like that's who's watching it. So I thought, well, if their eyes are on it because they think that they're going to be watching something that's going to make them laugh, then maybe, I don't know, they probably don't care, but or hopefully maybe that they'll see it and think that, oh, wow, like he has some Big Nasty, someone that I look up to, has something to say on the subject as well. Maybe that's going to make me more interested in it too. To be able to be putting stuff out there, like Arnold, you probably think the same thing, like putting stuff out there that makes people laugh if they've been having a rubbish day. I really like the comments when I get someone tweeting me saying that they had a really rubbish crap day and then they watched an episode of Chicken Shop Day and it made them feel better. Like, that's amazing that you can give that to someone. Because I definitely, like, consume content to make me feel better sometimes. When
Absolutely.
I'm stressed about things, you can watch something and it can really lift your mood in a way that, you know, sometimes interactions with real people can't.
That's a weird point.
So, yeah, that's a very good point.
Mm, it is, man. A lot of people, like someone the other day said to me, your videos kept me out of a lot of trouble. I could have been doing.
Wow.
Man, and I was like, raw, because I ain't put out stuff in so long. So sometimes
I've done
just
a lot for the community, though, man. Yeah. Like, in terms of like a figure, or even if it was just a character, you created something that not only laid the blueprint for lots of people to like evolve from, but also like allowed people to like channel like the conversations in our community in a way that was digestible. But at the same time, it's still kind of like it resonated. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's that. And that, to go back of what she's saying, it's key, man. Because I never really get fazed by them kind of comments as much. It just depends on how it's said to me. Like, that one there touched me only because the guy was like proper saying like he could have been doing madness, and it's like kept him out of trouble, in the sense where, not trouble like little trouble, he's like, it's helped him in more ways than one, you know. So it could be in this, I didn't get into detail with it, but it could have been in the sense where maybe him watching it motivated him in a different way and thought, oh, I don't have to do, because with me, I've never hid the fact that I came from the ends, and everyone knows I've come from the ends. If you know me from before, you know, whatever. But I just wanted to leave the end so bad once I saw a different life, that I thought, how can I show people that are in the ends how ridiculous this ends thing really is?
Yeah.
You get what I'm coming from? So I started, like, I remember when I first came out and I was meant to be a shotter as A Squeeze, and I was like, I got the lemon and the cheese.
For those who don't know, what's a shotter?
A shotter is an entrepreneur who works in pharmaceuticals in the end.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, and
I
had like lemon and chocolate, and I actually bought up Cadbury's chocolate, lemon.
I know what you're talking about.
It's like, is that still available online?
Yeah, that's on YouTube.
That's like people watching,
people laughing, like, bro, like, because I've had man from the ends come to me like, bro, you from the ends, isn't it? Because some of the stuff you do,
the references,
like,
on point.
That about,
yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, but it's like, it makes them laugh in the sense where they're looking at it like, I look ridiculous. It's just like ridiculous. Like, it's just silly.
I remember seeing your videos and thinking that they were so original. I feel like you were one of the first people to really like bring parody into that sort of world 100%. And culture. Oh, and there's so much power in parody, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, there is.
Like switching it on its head to say exactly what you just said, to show people how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
What they're doing in that sort of world.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Not to buoy no one off, but yeah, go on.
But AJ, do you know why what you do is important, especially when it comes to making fun of yourself, is that it takes a lot of vulnerability to be able to laugh at yourself. And when you are expressing that kind of vulnerability, the reason why mandem are like, do you know what, that was jokes, and like that has opened up a whole new perspective for me, is because if no one sees anybody being vulnerable, we're all going to think the only way to exist is to be hard and and to run away from feelings that scare us. So you didn't realise at the time that you laughing at yourself was you being able to own a side of yourself that was seen as something that's quite risky to do.
Yeah.
But you doing that was actually you empowering people that lived that same experience and encourage them to see that, you know what, it's cool to laugh at yourself, because through laughing at yourself, you're admitting that there are elements of yourself that maybe aren't as great that you could work on. And I think that's so important. And I think that's one of the ways that comedy can have a healing aspect to it, because 100%. It's about you just owning a situation and being like, this is mad. Let me just laugh about it. I'd rather 100. Laugh about it than lament.
Definitely.
That's it. Because it's one of...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Dozens where you can't take yourself too seriously, especially in the type of like era we live in now, where everything's so looked at like so hard, you know, like for example, mental health now, I feel like as of recent, has a lot of people have been opening up and mental health, like, and it sounds silly, like for example, I remember my dad, when I was a kid, he used to, I don't know why, till this day I'm confused, but he used to buy a Slim Shady CDs. I don't get it. I need to play
he
it for us on
to get
the way.
You into Eminem.
You know, Slim Shady old school was raw. Like,
yeah.
And my dad would pick us up from school,
and
have the CD on and pumping it. And I remember Eminem, you know, I never used to get bullied, but when I was in primary school, I got normal lips now, but I just quite had big lips in it. And I don't know why big lips are cool now, but in primary school, big lips weren't the lips.
Yeah, it was bad. And
I remember one guy, and this stuck with me, some guy said, if I was to throw you on the floor face first, you'll bounce back up.
I'm holding the laugh because that's deep.
That one crushed, man. But it was like, I used to get, like I remember there was a lyric called Who's Not Ready for the Mercage, that remember back in the days, Hyperfen and Marcy Phonics.
Oh, you're taking me
my
back,
friend used to come up to me, some guys come up to me and be like, you're not ready for the I remember all the cusses, I've got them all written down. But yeah, so it's like, I remember listening to Eminem's CD and him talking about being bullied. And I feel like from him saying that, it made a lot of kids that were getting bullied come out.
Yeah.
And be like, no, it's cool to get bullied, but you know what?
I made it. He's still own it.
Yeah. Because then, like, Eminem gets bullied. I remember looking like, yeah. And I remember from then, I remember I moved areas and I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to start again. I got the new school. I'm the cool kid now. And I came to school and I went to a new school and I just ran the whole primary school and high school.
Nicely.
And the ends, I was just doing my thing. Because it's bad and it's good at the same time, because I got, I wouldn't say bullied, it was just picked on.
Listening
to Eminem, and he was like, yeah. So now I feel like we've met the whole.
He empowered you.
Yeah, and it's good to make not a joke about it, but come out and make it seem like I'm going through mental health as well. What? You know what I mean?
Like, the discussion.
Let's talk, as opposed to I'm going to just keep quiet. Like, when I listened to, like, back in the days, I listened to Tyler, the Creator. And before listening to him, I thought every celebrity was good. And I remember he had a lyric where he was like, sell out a tour in Paris just to end up on couches. And I was like, what? Yeah. How'd you end up on... And his albums are just real. Like, I'm still at my grandma's yard. I ain't got no peace to move out, but I'm selling out. And I was listening to him thinking, he just owns this thing. He's not glamorizing it like it's good to be broke, but he's saying, look, I'm an artist and I'm still broke. You know what I mean? And it makes you want to support them more. Yeah. So
I've never actually listened that much to Tyler, but
it's powerful, I think, when you own your insecurities.
Yeah, and say, this is me. I'm a hood guy, but I want to change.
What item did you bring?
That's it. I got a lyric. From
give us the whole 16 though. Don't give us the lyric in isolation, give us the whole context.
It's literally the lyric, and I'll give a context. The lyric I've got is from Swiss Cry. It's look what happened to the motherland. They don't want to see blacks the same as another man. And it's that lyric. The reason I've got
you
that lyric,
carry on, bro. I don't trade shade, but they call me a coloured man. Come on,
that's it. Go and say the lyric. They tell me a coloured man. I don't change. That's it. Look what happened to the motherland. They don't want to see blacks the same as a motherland. I don't change colour, but they call me a coloured man. And the reason I got that is because so many conversations that we had about obviously colonizing and, you know, how, you know, I feel like the urban community is being looked at in a much more positive light, as opposed to like what we was talking about earlier was like everything changes a year later, something that was good can be bad. You know what I mean?
And at that social time, landscape is constantly changing.
And at the time it was hard to be black or urban or whatever. And now it's like it's accepted. You know what I mean? And people are not worried about charting, they're not worried about labels, they're not worried about being mainstream. They're coming out and saying, yo, this is me and this is what I'm gonna do. And I'm gonna, like, when you look at the Rated Awards, for example, like it's just like just things that at the time when someone's saying put an award show, because I remember
being invited to that, you know, I never, I know, Z-list out here, boy, you know what I'm saying?
You've never been invited to the Prince's Yard, man, and Teresa's yard.
You're good, you're invited to the palace.
You're in a different type of
invite. I know, but I would like to be invited to the cookout as well, innit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Rated, but that's why my item is that, because I feel like it means a lot now when you listen to that lyric now. And to see how far we've come, you know, as a community, as people, as young, talented individuals, you know, who at one point was thinking, how's my music or how's my art going to affect someone? And to now it be in a career, you know what I mean? And that lyric, you can hear it now. And is that when you say, I look back and I laugh? Yeah. You know what I mean? You can hear that lyric now and be like, look what happened to my, they want to see black.
So what do you think the change? Do you think youth... or young people were the key to change, even if we're talking not even just in music, we're talking about like in politics and in wider society, because this change that happened, what was the catalyst for it? You know what I'm saying?
I think so, but you see, my problem with is, this is something that I'm very, you know, passionate about. It's, for example, I don't ever push that the only way to do something you love is in the industry. A lot of people push that you have to
be
a musician.
What that
you have
means?
To be. And I mean, in the sense of someone might want to be a doctor. Someone might want to be a lawyer. Someone might want to do something else, right? Now, my problem is this. A lot of people from the ends, and I speak from someone that was from the ends, right? From the ends, it's not that we're dumb. We just ain't have knowledge on how to
awareness,
get out. How can we get there, right? So, for example, you'd have a guy who, for example, done something when he was like 16. He's now 28, 30, whatever. And he wants to change his life and tries to get a job. But because of his DBS, right? They're looking at him. DBS is based like a criminal record. So when you go and what's on your record, like you go apply for a job, you do a DBS check, which you have to pay for on top of that, right? And then the results come back and it says, yo, you've done this when you were 16. Now we don't want to hire you. And it's like, they look at that and it's like off face value. Like that says that. But okay, that was when you were 16. He's 30 now. You can see that this guy's trying. And then that happens, he gets demotivated and goes back to the ends or thinks music's my only outlet or thinks I have to act. But he might want to do something else. He might want to work with kids. He might want to work as a carer because maybe he's had experience with his grandma who was struggling. He wants to help more people like that. But because of that DBS thing, he tries to go out there and it's like, oh, yeah, we look down on you. And I think that's what's hard on the community. I think there needs to be some change in that because we're just making it seem, not weird as in us in the room, in hindsight, it's making it seem as if, to chase your dream, you've got to be a rapper, bro. Like you, if you want to be a teacher,
there's more industries where you can have success in, not just music or TV or sports.
That, like the only, for example, the only, you know, barrier that people have in the industry is that, for example, if your DBS or whatever is bad, you might not be allowed to come to London. Like, for example, Meek Mill or Frenchman might ain't allowed to come to London, for example, because whatever they've done in the past. That's the only kind of barrier, but you can get in. Whereas when you're not trying to do the industry thing, you can't even get in because they'll look at that and say, yeah, we understand that, you know, you've done community work and, you know, you've done this and you've been helping your area for six years. But because when you was 17, you threw firework on the bus and got charged for it.
We can't hide.
And it's like, get to know me, man.
So
you know what I mean?
It's a vicious cycle, really, isn't it?
It is,
If you're going to stop people from getting opportunities, then you're not going to have any more success, are you, in the community?
There you go. And how do you expect these kids to stay doing what they... Because a lot of these, I've seen people get turned down by that and be like, you know what? I'm just going to go back to the ends because the ends accepts me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm a shotter, a pharmaceutical. That accepts me. You know what I mean? I'm going to go back and do that because I've seen people in the ends that are trying. Like, they really trying to change their life around. Like, as in they... It's like, because, you know, you've worked in retail and you know how it goes. You can't make big money at a retail place.
You can't
afford a house working at a retail. You can't even probably afford rent. You know what I mean? Minimum wage is hard, isn't it? So someone might want to, you know, get a degree or do something better. Like even some degrees that you're trying to get, they ask for DBS. You know what I mean? Some degrees that you're trying to apply universities, they ask for DBS. And if your DBS is bad, they don't let you come into the university. It's all these little things. And it's like, you're just kind of putting preventions on people.
Yeah.
That people that deserve, everyone deserves a second chance. You know what I mean?
But it's interesting what you said at first about what's changed, what made it change now that we're now all here and everyone's and the scene actually is so incredible right now. I'm trying to think of what the turning point was from it being from it being more underground to now, like the
German whip. Wasn't it German?
I think everyone just accepted that we actually can do this. It's like for example, the first music video. I can't remember what song it was.
What do you mean?
The first music video on MTV. When MTV first came out, there was a song.
Michael Jackson, was it?
No, not Michael Jackson. It was
Madonna, no?
No, it was some two...
Video killed it.
Yes, that's why you're the G.
Isn't that Madonna?
No, it was Video Killed...
Oh, I can't remember her name.
Yes, Delita.
Video Killed
The Radio Star. They always sampled it. I think they even sampled it.
Wait, is that... Video Killed The Radio Star.
Wait, sorry, is that the turning point?
No. Sorry.
I was like, what? And then Skepta won a Mercury.
Their ticket shop date became big. Now, it was basically what happened was... What I'm trying to say is when that first music video came out, it was weird. It was like, music videos? What's that about? Well, we don't want to do that. You know what I mean? And then it takes someone just saying, you know what? Come, this is it. This is the new wave. Let's do it. So when someone does, for example, the urban thing, a lot of people might be like, nah, man, we need a label. We need this. But then now people are like, we don't need labels. You see people like Stormzy, Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
People like JME, who's even says it on his bio, no label, no A&R.
JME's been independent for the longest.
There you go. And it takes a whole community to say, you know what? We're going to... Because it's a risk. To say, imagine everyone said, let's leave our label, right? It's a risk, isn't it? But it takes them to just say that and do it and then see if it works or not. Yeah. If that makes sense.
I also think, like, again, going back to the internet and social media and the fact that people now can be independent much more easily as artists and just in general creatives because they can push their own music out there and they can push their own product, whatever that may be, without needing these corporations
and their platforms
to do it for you. You have your own platform.
Yeah.
Myself, you and AJ were having a discussion earlier about how there are certain things that happened at the time that if they happened now, they would have been received so much differently because of how aware we are and how conversations are influencing the way we even approach music, which is why I even think music has changed so much. Like with Skepta winning a Mercury, it's like certain conversations have allowed that to happen because we're now receptive to understanding the depth and the meaning of that person's story and why it's so culturally relevant.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what I was saying with German Whip, because I feel like past the grime era of when you had like Dizzy, you had like Skepta, past all of that stuff, that was the first time in years I'd heard a grime song like that was being championed like all everywhere.
German was the first to chart, and I was like,
I thought grime was dead to many people, and I was thinking, rah, but it was because social media. I remember I was in Ghana when I heard it and I wasn't even in the country, and I was like, rah, like what, Dan, like really, like
See how when that happened, everyone came forward and said, you know what, grime can actually do it. And that's all it takes is for community. Because it is risky. Imagine, you know, we're all chilling, right? And we're all 9-to-5ers. And it's like, for example, Modern Family. There's a show called Modern Family. And a couple of the actors weren't getting paid enough or whatever.
Yeah.
So all of them took a strike. Yeah, for mm-hmm. so and then when they money went up, they all came back. But imagine you take a strike, you get fired.
Yeah.
It's like a risk, yeah. isn't it? It's like it takes everyone to say, yeah. you know what, I'm putting my foot down. As a whole.
But
yeah.
with Skepta as well, I think that he like is so monumental in like the yeah. change in terms of like the music and its popularity right now. But I think it's because in his like with That's Not Me, for example, is like another track which I think like
yeah.
really blew up, and like and I think that's because him and his brother were owning their identity and who they are. The whole like meaning of That's Not Me, he's throwing away his Louis Vuitton, like throwing away yeah. all these things.
I'm trying to
he's
find now that bin that he threw in.
Sitting, what is it, the lyrics? Sitting in a black tracksuit, sitting in the front row. Like he is really owning the fact that, yeah, he wears a tracksuit every day and that's cool and that's fine. I don't have to be anything that I'm not. Mm. I'm me. I'm unapologetically me. And I think that people, audiences really resonated with the fact that he was really proud of like the fact of his identity, and I think that's why the scene really like caught on from that sort of like that, yeah, authentic. Yeah.
It became a wave.
After Ace Hood Flow, he just went on a mad one. He's yeah, just like, I don't like, care about anything else.
And it becomes a wave because everyone, once that happened, everyone kind of looked at that and said, like, Chip started coming back. You know, you had Stormzy coming in. You had, at the time, Bonkers was doing his thing at the yes. time. There was so much people that was just coming forward and saying, you know what, we can do this. If you go and link up at that era, Link Up and Grime, that era, it's like a chunk where it was just mills on point. Because back in the days, when I was out here, I'd get like 100,000 hits and that was the thing.
Yeah, that was big. Yeah, of course.
But now it's
even like now 100,000 is still a lot. Yeah.
Now, it's a lot, but I mean like in the sense of like, relative. it's like 1,000 how it was back then. Because remember back then when Crept and Corner got their first mil.
Yeah, and they were doing push-ups and everything.
Everyone was like,
they were doing push-ups, they made a special video and all that. Yeah.
A mil, blood. Like, that was, nowadays, a mil was standard. They've all got plaques in that. Grime Daily got plaques for a mil. Like it's nothing. Like, they just got it ready. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, everyone has to champion something and say, look, I believe in this, we can do it, and just jump on board, as opposed to how it was before, like when Grime first came out. Grime started in 2004 or whatever.
Yeah,
and look how long it took, only now where people are like, because everyone now, because back then they were all beefing each other, they were all clashing one another, they hated each other. Like,
yeah, everyone was young. I would say that the leaders of the scene at the time were kids, bro.
Look like, at Lethal B, like, what Lethal B put up, and yeah. he said while he was on TV, and his mum said, is that the guy that said I had athlete's foot?
Oh, yes, yeah,
you
yeah,
know
yeah.
what I mean? Because they was like, Bashy made a 10-minute diss track for Wiley, bro.
Oh, yeah, he went in on
where he talks
still.
About his sister.
Talking about Peter, calling
like,
him a Peter.
You think you're a player? I moved to your sister, Janaya. Like, it was like, like mad, but now they bredgins, you know what I mean? And it took a while for everyone to just say, you know what, let's get this money or let's move forward as opposed to.
I think it's so amazing that now, like, young people can, like, and in communities, I really think are coming together, even though at the beginning of this, we were talking about communities divided. Like, I think seeing the success of people that we've just mentioned, like Skepta, like people who have been on Chicken Shop Date, people that we all know and have worked with, like, seeing their success, I feel like is really empowering to communities, especially for young people to see. I just think it's amazing that, like, you can see people that have grown and have such success who have come from communities that are a lot like your own. Like, that's amazing.
And not even just musicians. We were talking about Mo before, and look at the journey that he's taken to get to where he is. And just across the road, he's selling out these massive venues, you know what I mean? That's from Sunday Show back in the day, you know what I mean? That's been a journey of like 10, like almost 10 years, you get what I'm saying? So let's talk about youth, like, and actual like activism, you know what I mean? In terms of like youth engaging and stuff. You recently ran a petition, didn't you, Amelia? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I think it was a couple of years ago now. I think maybe a year and a half ago. But the youth club that we were speaking about in Northwest London, called The Stow, where The Cut magazine was run from, has been shut because of cuts to youth services. So youth services are not a statutory service in the government.
What does that
which
mean?
Which means, so the government has statutory services that are, so legal requirements that you have to fund. So like healthcare, education.
Well, like Citizens Advice Bureau and all that.
I'm not sure. I don't think it's so. It's more like services that the government provides legally. They have to, and youth services are not one of those. A majority of the time, youth services are the first thing to be cut when local council budgets are decreased, which is what happened when the Conservatives came into power nearly over 8 years ago now, and so because of these cuts, the youth club couldn't afford to be run anymore. And so I started a petition, an online petition, to try and galvanise people to keep it open. I think if we had a certain amount of signatures, then it would be a topic in the next council meeting. Obviously, the petition sadly didn't help the situation. And now, the youth club has been forced to shut, as along with so many others in my borough of Westminster and also across the country and nationwide. And it's terrible, really. But the Labour have a pledge that if they get into power that they will make youth services a statutory service, which I think is the right step. Yeah, and I think that the government we have now should be pledging that too, because if you're not supporting young people, then I feel like the foundations to society overall are flawed majorly. I just think how amazing it would be if all young people had the support network that I had, that other people had, like how that will go on to make incredible adults.
100%.
Yeah. I feel like they need to, bring back youth clubs.
You need funding.
Yeah, they need to bring things like, for example, more workshops, more things that, because now the industry is so intact where the guy that's big now lives on the estate anyway.
Yeah.
So collaborate with these people, meet with these people and say, how can we create stuff for your neighbourhood, create more purposeful things?
And then you take them away from thinking that violence is the only way to like engage with each other.
That's it,
you know,
because I'm sure if me and Amelia just went to the cut, and it wasn't the cut, we just went to Stowe to just chill, I doubt man would have had the ideas we had. We would just be
As well, it's like, what I've noticed because of the lack of government funding is that actually a lot of brands are now trying to occupy this space in terms of running workshops, being sort of providing the money that they have to try and help young people. But sometimes with brands, you have the... what could happen is that it's more for show and that actually it's more of a publicity thing, a PR thing, that a brand wants to show that they're engaging in young people, but actually they're not following through. So it will be like a sort of a day of things or like something rather than like something that's more long term, which I think that government money can really provide stability. Yeah. I know that there are a lot of brands and companies that do provide more long-term things. But I do think that that's something that should be explored more. If you ask a lot of people within different industries if they'd be willing to share some of their experiences and give up their time, I think they would. I think that people also have a responsibility to go out and see how they can help young people and what they can give.
I think that's a great point for us to kind of like bring it full circle. So I think the way we end the show every week is we kind of ask one person what they've learned through the process of being in the show.
The whole point of this conversation is that everyone's on the same level. Nobody is more righteous or smart than anyone else. And I think for us to be able to progress and learn from each other in this fast-moving society that we're living in, it's really key that we have these conversations and give each other the opportunity to learn something from each other, because ultimately, what's the point in having these conversations if you don't feel like you can contribute? So for me, I learned from AJ that there are so many different ways of displaying your excellence, and you don't necessarily have to do it in a creative way. And it reminds me of so there's a time when I met Oprah, right? And I asked her.
You met Oprah?
Yeah.
She just said it. Someone
met Oprah. Anyway.
You don't just say like that. You don't say.
Theresa May invited me to a party. I said no. Someone met Oprah.
You don't graze over Oprah.
Damn, you met Oprah?
So I met Oprah, and I asked her a question. And I asked her what her favorite quote is.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me of what you're talking about. Her favorite quote. Paraphrased a Martin Luther King quote, and she said, not everybody can be famous, but everybody can be great, because greatness is about service to others. And I think that's really, really key and something to keep in mind, because in anything that you do, whether it's entertainment and comedy through like Chicken Shop Dates, or whether it's through you directing and producing something that tells a really important story, or whether it's through you just like, you know, writing blogs, whatever you're doing, I think it's really key that you're keeping in mind that someone gets something out of this that isn't just you, that it allow someone to see a whole different way of approaching and viewing the world.
Yeah.
Sully, what about you? What have you learned today?
I think what I've really learned is kind of happens off the outside of the conversation, but just watching both of these two speak. And I just think the level of growth I'm seeing in both of them. Obviously, you know what I mean? Like, obviously, Amelia, with where she started and where she is now, you know what I mean? I love watching, like, success stories, but also, like, Arnold, you know, coming from A Squeezy to where he is now and the conversations he's having, do you get what I'm saying? And thinking about, like, how much, like, the story of how much he was invested in the creation of the culture, you know what I'm saying? And how you just started. And then this weird serendipity that the same youth centre that is no longer existing contributes towards this conversation.
This wasn't planned, by the way.
You
honestly
understand what I'm saying? It's like, it's weird because no one knew that, but like the way that it couldn't, like, it's just, I think that's really what was like just left me. That's really what I'm going to be thinking about outside of everything we said. Yeah. That's really one of the things that I'm going to take
very
away from today.
Moment. Amelia, have you got anything today?
I think, yeah, just the same, just by being here with you guys, seeing the sort of, as you were saying, the growth of people, because I've known you guys, both of you two, for years, and Shadira, I've known you for a while now as well. But it's just the fact that we've like, hard work pays off, I think that's what it is, and that like that anyone can get to this level as well, that you don't have to, you know, have tons of cash, you don't have to have all the equipment, you can make something from your on your own terms and with your network and your community that's around you. Like, I think that that's really what I've learned just from the fact that we're all sitting in this room.
I've learned that the importance of unity, you know what I mean, the importance of unity, the importance of coming together as a community and having conversations, even if the conversations don't bring a direct solution then and there. It's just that conversation. Yeah, that seed, like just what Sully was saying about what he's going to take from outside. Like, it's a seed that's been planted that, you know, it helps spark something sometimes, you know. So, like, we can have these conversations and I might sit at home because I've got a script that I've been working on that I meant to commission, but I've taken long to start. And this conversation just gives me that motivation just to see all you lot's growth. I'm going to go in today and just really, well, I hope so.
Oh,
yeah,
that's amazing.
I say I will, but
you will, bro. You will,
You will.
Speak it into existence.
Finish that script.
Hey, you must be account, I have to, you know. But
I think that's a great way to end today.
It's been amazing. Thank you so much for coming.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.